All right. I think we're live. John, can you hear
Well, it's good to be live. It's much better than the alternative.
Awesome. Hey, everybody, welcome and thanks for tuning in to our live conclusion of this series, Shine, which has been a walk through the book of Philippians. If you don't know, Become New is an online ministry with teaching from Pastor John Ortberg. Morning, John.
Good morning.
We
I'm actually
distribute.
texting somebody who's part of Become New right this second.
Oh my goodness. What are you
Yeah.
saying?
I can't say right now, but it's kind of personal, but it's real good. But that's why I was looking slightly distracted.
No worries. We distribute 10-minute teachings every weekday to anyone who wants them. So thanks for joining us for this live conclusion. Here's one thing I'd love for you to do as we're going about this is if you want to just chime in the comments and let us know where you're joining from today, that would be awesome. We'd love to know. And you can even phrase it like this if you want, becoming new in dot dot dot, wherever you're at.
Ooh.
So I'm becoming new in Maple Grove, Minnesota. And we've got Jackson on today. Jackson's our behind the scenes creative guy. Jackson, where are you tuning in from today?
I'm becoming new in Oklahoma City.
Just for people to know, Jackson is a genius around like creativity, all things video, camera, storytelling, narrative, and a multifaceted human being. A while ago, we had another friend of the show, Brad Wright, sociologist, was meeting with our team talking about purpose and had
Oh,
this cool
goodness.
exercise where you reflect on if you didn't do what you're doing, who are alternate persons you might have been or paths you might have taken. And one of them for Jackson's was he is a poet in the woods. So that's become a line that we return to very often. So if you want to know who Jackson is, amongst many, many, many other dimensions, his soul is that of a poet in the woods.
It's really true.
Thank you for that, John. I appreciate
Yeah.
it.
Yep.
I'm glad
I probably
everyone
should
needs
have
to know that
said
now.
that, but yeah.
That's a beautiful thing. Wonderful. Well, John, we're excited to just be on with you and so grateful for this series and just all the teaching that you've brought to us and this community every day. I've got a bunch of questions that I'm going to run through with you. And I know people who are tuning in may have questions as well. So if you're joining right now and you've got a question for John about this series, the Book of Philippians, feel free to drop it in the comments and we'll try to get to it later. But John, I'll start with just one question for you. How was this journey for you walking through Philippians? Was there anything kind of new or surprising going through this content, which you've gone through so many times before? For you, you're teaching it out every day.
Yeah, I'll say a word about that. But also, another thing for you all, you probably know, I'm like the most technically incompetent person in the world. And I'm always pushing or failing to push the right or wrong button. At the moment, I always love seeing chat and people's comments, and I can't see it on my screen right now. Have I done anything to mess stuff up? Or if there's anything I can do that can help me to see the chat and comments from folks, let me know.
Yeah, there's a tab on the right of your screen, and at the very
Yeah.
bottom, it should say chat, I think.
Or the very top.
Or is it at the top, Jackson?
Yes, yeah, this little button says chat. It's like a blue button.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, there you go.
And there they are. That's amazing. See, Jackson is a genius.
Is a
Oh,
Yes.
goodness.
Yeah. Who would have guessed it would be a button that would say chat on it that would get you to the chat? I think Tim, probably for me, a very striking part of being able to go through Philippians was just the companionship with the guy who had been my teacher, Jerry Hawthorne, and I'll mention him a little bit more today. But it reminds me of that statement about we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And for all of the people who are physically present with us and others whom may not be. And to be open to the way that God speaks through a person to us, and to remember that. Such a gift. So that's been a wonderful part of the journey for me, is just feeling like one of those people in the cloud, not the tech cloud, but the spiritual cloud, is present in such deep ways.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Another question I have for just people who are tuning in today as you're joining is, if you have a favorite verse from Philippians, we would love to know what it is. So we walked through this whole book. And John, also, you were kind of traveling a little bit throughout this series in Ireland at one point, Morocco.
Yes.
And doing just different insights from those places. One of my favorite episodes was when you did the episode on St. Patrick, I think it was, when you walked through that prayer, which is just remarkable. I was listening to it again yesterday. But what was it like what's it like to teach on the go? You know,
I mean, yeah, I like to travel a lot. In fact, Linda is tuning in from Key Largo, or Largo, Florida. I assume it's Key Largo. And I'm actually going to be down there, I think, in December. You know, it's interesting that historically, one of the activities that people who follow Jesus would engage in, and actually folks in lots of different traditions, is just pilgrimage. And so, you know, that was a big part of the Jewish faith, to go to Jerusalem. The Psalms of Ascent are taken from that. It's one of the five pillars in Islam. And I think there's something about the nature of the soul that when we get into a different place and we see different sights, different people, different cultures, it opens us up to possibilities and other worlds and new thoughts and new ideas. And so there's a reason why that was practiced by folks for such a long time. Now we think more of vacations than pilgrimage. And I think that notion that when I'm going someplace, I can be looking for God as I'm there. And I just find there will be kind of insights and observations and possibilities of change that open themselves up on the road, on pilgrimage, in ways that doesn't necessarily happen when I'm just in the same old place.
Yeah. Well, it was fun. It's always fun to kind of go along with you. But then I also like your office view. I had a question that came in, John, during this series.
Yes.
I think it was in a YouTube comment, and someone asked if you have read every book in your office. Have you actually read every book?
No, I have not read every book in my office. I love books. I love having them around. I've read lots of them, but no, lots that I haven't read.
Well, what's the percentage, John?
Gee whiz. I would say I've probably read, 60 or 70%. Some of the stuff, like my computer is sitting right now on the Evangelical Dictionary of Theology and a big thick volume of the Theological Dictionary of the New Testament. And those are more kind of technical resources. So they're useful in moments to look up a particular article, but there's no way that I would have read through all of them. It's my best guess.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Before we dive into what you have to share today, I have another question. And this is also just for everyone tuning in. So if you're tuning in and you want to answer this question in the comments, Paul talks about contentment in all circumstances, which you taught on. What's one place that you are currently learning to be content, or maybe perpetually always learning to be content in your own life? And this question is for you too, Jackson, and for me, and for you, John. So what do you think?
You know, it was funny when we were in Morocco. I don't know if I mentioned this or not. A difficulty for me is sometimes, because I talk so much, I don't know what I've said and what I haven't said. But it struck me when we were there. It was actually the moment we had a guide. We were going through one of those old walled cities, Medinas, and it was time to tip. And it was like, oh, I could just ask Jesus, how much do I tip this person? And you know, that idea of contentment with Paul isn't just an emotional experience. It's I've learned that I can face anything through Christ who gives me strength. And so what hit me was, how many times during the day am I not thinking about Jesus, not including him, not asking him, what shall we do here? What kind of decision shall I make? How shall I spend my time right now? What shall I think about? I'm having this thought. Should I indulge it? I'm talking with you right now. Jesus, would you give me wisdom on what I should say and when I should stop talking? So even on this trip, just a whole kind of vista opening up of how much do I not do that? And then I don't have to beat myself up over that. I can take that as an invitation to try much more frequently and easily and fluidly that I do to invite him into a situation. And that's where the contentment comes in. So it feels quite fresh to me in that way. And mostly like an opportunity so that when I'm not doing it, I could just say, oh, here's another chance.
Oh man, just love how like practical and applicable that example is. Yeah. I'll share a few people in the comments who are chiming in, maybe some that you know. Nancy Beach said, learning to be content in a new season of life as a mentor, grandma, and friend in a new place. Nan said, learning to be content with aging and physical issues. And then this is from Jonathan. Stepped away from executive level position to take a 3-month sabbatical, learning attachment, contentment.
Man.
Mary Beth says, learning to be content in God's timing while transitioning to a new season of life. So thanks for chiming in and reflecting on that. I think it's just kind of this continual lifelong journey. For me, we've worked together for a while now, John, and I just can't help myself. Whenever there's space in my life, I just try to fill it up with new things. And it's sort of this involuntary, and it's the kind of thing you lose conscious awareness of, you know, when you slip into just your modus operandi and you forget that you're trying to be intentional. So I think learning to be content with the number of things I have going on in my life is always a challenge for me, and to not let restlessness crowd out my focus and attention from my family, especially. I think that's always hard for me.
So good. We were actually with Nancy Beach last night. She's out here, and another friend to Become New, Jimmy Miato, and a whole group of folks from Compassion International. And so over the next days, a couple of days, we'll all be together to walk a group of people through what all Compassion is doing. And it's real striking. You know, they're helping now more than 2 million children get out of poverty, and doing it through churches in ways that really lift Jesus up. But it's real striking when you go to a place where there's great poverty and you see often there's more contentment there than there is in places of great affluence. Mm-hmm. So just grateful to be a little part of that over the next couple of days together with Nancy. Good morning, Nance. Glad you're up.
Yeah. Jackson, you bopped off the call for a second, but you're back. And the question is, where are you learning to find contentment? You want to answer?
Yeah. I think a little bit in parenthood right now. I think that's a very real for us. We've got a 3.5 and a 2-year-old. So just appreciating my children for who they are and where they are, and not getting caught up in the small frustrations of things taking longer than they normally would if the kids weren't so little, and rediscovering the magic. I think something that helps is like seeing the world and through their eyes. And I think I feel connected to God through that when I'm trying to do that with my wife, you know, just seeing like their innocence and how they view things. And so it's a very real reality for us right now.
Thanks, Jackson. Thanks for sharing that. I like that question. And one of the cool things about Become New is that we do try to offer like a practical question or suggestion to put into practice each day, mm-hmm. because the goal is to become new. I mean, the goal is every day. And I do encourage everybody who's tuning in right now, if you subscribe or whatnot to the emails or the text or YouTube, just to, you know, to try making taking in these teachings daily a part of your daily habit. That's something that I do. Obviously, like, we listen to the teachings multiple times as we're preparing them. But first thing in the morning, I grab my little light phone and hit play on the Become New podcast. That's how I start my day, with your voice, John. My kids imitate your voice too often, probably.
No one should have to go through that.
But it is just such a helpful way to get your mind right, you know, in the first moments of the day, at least for me. So thank you for just being so faithful and showing up and teaching, providing that. One of our goals this year is to just distribute a teaching every weekday through the whole year. And so even when we're not in a fresh series, we're sending out those teachings so that we can just make that a part of our habit. John, I'm going to hand it over to you. And as I do, would love to encourage everyone tuning in to participate in just a post-series survey. So want to learn, how did this series help you grow spiritually? That's kind of our main purpose at Become New, is to grow spiritually ourselves one day at a time, but to help others. So you can go to just bnfeedback.com and fill out that quick survey for us. That would be awesome, because we'd love to hear from you. How was this series? How did it help you grow? And so thanks for your participation in that. But now, John, I will just hand it over to you for whatever you have prepared for us today.
Yeah. And also in that feedback, how did it not help, or what could have been more helpful, or are there suggestions? So both on the positive side, that's great. But we always want to keep learning and getting better. So in either direction. I want to take a couple moments. I was telling Tim and Jackson, going through this experience and listening again to the voice of a teacher, Jerry Hawthorne, who devoted his whole life to trying to understand scripture and help the rest of us understand it. We owe such a debt to folks who do that sort of thing. And so I want to take a few moments to walk through some of Jerry's comments. Nancy was with a good friend of ours very recently. I know lots of us, lots of you are going through real deep issues or valleys, and we hear about them quite regularly. And a lot of questions come out of that are not at all abstract. And one of them was from a friend going through something hard, not sure what the outcome is going to be, who asked, what's the difference between surrender and giving up? And so I want to talk a bit about Jerry's teachings, particularly on the Christ hymn. That's that passage in chapter 2, verses 6 through 11, where Paul says, let this mind also be in you that was in Christ Jesus. And then I'll come back around to that question of what's the difference between giving up, which we're never called to do. That's an act of despair, but surrender, your will be done. So, that little passage, the Christ hymn, about how Jesus became obedient to death on the cross and then God has exalted him, is thought to be maybe the oldest section in all of the New Testament. It may be that Paul wrote that. It may be that that was a hymn to Jesus that existed even before that he incorporated into his letter, but it's very ancient, very central. Jerry writes about how Paul says that Jesus was in the very form of God. He uses the little word morphing. We get that word from it. And it talks about the essential nature of something. So you'd never use that, Jerry says, of like a wolf in sheep's clothing, where wolf just looks like a sheep. It's the very being of something. The form of God, therefore, may correctly be understood as the essential nature and character of God. This somewhat enigmatic expression appears then to be a cautious, oblique manner of speaking, by which Paul says that Christ was God possessing the very nature of God. He talks about how difficult it would have been for somebody who was raised in Judaism, strict monotheism, you know, we are not polytheist, to come to the discovery of who this person Jesus was. Because we live so many centuries later, we can take that for granted, but it would have been a remarkable journey of mind and faith for someone to come to that discovery. And then Jerry goes on, still another difficulty in understanding the meaning of the hymn is the Greek word harpagmon in the sentence, Jesus did not consider that being equal with God was harpagmon. This word appears only once in the New Testament, right here, not at all in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, very rarely in secular Greek. So understanding what does it mean here, very difficult. It's a hard work. Some understand harpagmon to mean a snatching after, an act of aggression. To say then that Christ thought it not robbery to be equal with God is to say that Christ, knowing himself to be equal with God, knew that to be so was not the result of an act of aggression. He knew that equality with God was his by right, not by force. So the idea, if that was the case, is that he hadn't tried to snatch something. But then Jerry goes on to explain what he thinks the best definition of this is. Harpagmon doesn't refer so much to a thing to be grasped or a thing to be clung to as to the act of snatching itself, acquisitiveness, the desire to get, the desire to have. Thus, to consider oneself equal with God does not mean that one considers he has the right to take everything to himself, to grasp. It intends to say that Jesus did not believe his equality with God gave him the right to snatch, to grasp, to acquire everything for himself. When we got back from our trip, we had several, I won't point them out, but letters from credit card companies saying, you can get more. We think highly of you. You can now approach us with confidence and you can acquire more. And Jerry actually cites Tom Wright. This is over 40 years ago. He's the first person I knew that cited N.T. Wright in an article where Tom wrote with this understanding of the Christ hymn. In contrast with the standard picture of Oriental despots who understood their position as something to be used for their advantage. It's good to be king. I can have whatever I want. Jesus understood his position to mean self-negation, that is, divine equality. To be equal with God does not mean getting, but it means giving. And it is properly expressed in self-giving love. I know of a family, a couple, where anytime we're out to eat, it's often a problem because he assumes his husbandhood means he has the right to snatch food from his wife's plate. Mm-hmm. And then he bothers her when he does that because she does not think that he has that prerogative. And generally we'll think in our culture that power means I have the right to acquire this. I have the right to get this. And we can easily read that back into God. And Jerry says, no, what Jesus understood is God is exactly the opposite of that. That being in the very nature of God doesn't mean you get to have what you want. Being in the very nature of God means that you offer yourself, you empty yourself in self-giving love. You go to the cross, you become vulnerable. I have a little Band-Aid on my hand. I've reached this stage in life and my skin's always been kind of this way where I wake up and I'm bleeding all the time and I have no idea what caused it. My skin is like paper now. So I'm just constantly, but I'm not choosing to do that. And the amazing thing about Jesus is he chose to become vulnerable. He chose to pour out his blood precisely because he was in very nature God. So now coming back around to that question, what's the difference between surrender and just giving up? And I'm thinking particularly of you, my very dear friend, but also of all of us in so many different situations. I think the difference is the decision to keep giving ourselves in self-offering love. And you may be in a situation where your marriage might be ending, or you had a job that was a dream and it looks like that may not turn out, or there's something real dire in your health, or a friend has abandoned you, or there's something happening where it may end. And surrender is not the same thing as just saying in despair, well, then my life is meaningless and worth nothing, and so I'm giving up. It's I'm not in control of this outcome, and the outcome may end up in a way that I don't want it to end up. However, I will continue to walk with God and the best that I can to the people that I love, offer myself in self-giving love. And you do that. And you do that. And that's what Jesus supremely did. And so Jerry says, Paul writes us this hymn about him, this unbelievably beautiful and inspiring and majestic hymn that has fired the hearts and imaginations of followers of Jesus for 2,000 years, so that that mind that was in him might also be in us. So we don't give up. You don't give up. You never give up. We're the fellowship of the withered hand, but we don't give up, but we surrender. We seek to do what Jesus did and understand that our God is a God who loves to give himself. And so we try to be like him in that way because we live in the care of God's love for us.
Thanks, John. That's beautiful. I mean, my mind goes to, when I hear all of that, you know, how do you do that? And where does the idea of self-care fit in, you know, when you're pouring yourself out, but we're just in this culture right now. And some of it feels really valid and helpful where it's like, oh, you are working too hard. You are too busy. You are too stretched. You need to take care of yourself. And there's something deep that touches a deep part, I think, of our culture. Or at least, I mean, even me, as I was sharing, one of the things I have a hard time being content in is like, I always feel like I'm not doing enough in my life. I wake up every day with a feeling of, I didn't do enough yesterday. How do I do enough today?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes that message of take care of yourself, you know, speaks to me. Is that intention at all with what you're talking about every day we keep pouring ourselves out? And how do you do that with the easy yoke, right? Willard said, if your yoke is heavy and your burden is heavy, then you've got the wrong yoke. So I think about that sometimes as like, what yoke do I have? Do I have the right yoke? You know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think in the abstract, it's not intention. In the abstract, we're called to live in the love of God. And very often that will involve things like rest. That's part of why God gives us Sabbath. That's part of why God creates the day and the night. And the night is a time of rest. And Paul's, you know, constantly in Philippians coming back to joy, rejoice in the Lord always. Do those things, those acts of celebration, to play, to delight, to look at the world and be thrilled with how beautiful it is, to go down and walk in some place where it just makes you happy to be out in nature. So in the abstract, I don't think there's tension, but in real life, for sure there is, all the time. And that question of when is it time for me to be still, to be quiet, to withdraw, to do something that I love to do, to take in, and then when is it time for me to give out? I mean, breathing is just such a great picture of this. We breathe in so that we can be nurtured, and then we breathe out expiration. And so there's a rhythm of that. And I think trying to figure out what that rhythm in our lives is. Jackson, as the parent of young children, you're going to struggle with that a ton. Churches often are not helpful if they tell people, you know, here's stuff that you ought to engage in for spiritual practices in your life. And often that will be old people like me whose kids are long grown, if they had any, whose time availability is much different. But for a young dad or especially a young mom, you know, where quiet time is just an oxymoron, that feels like more legalism and it's not helpful at all. So there are some seasons in life where just trying to carve out times for rest and for what we'll talk about as self-care now is a really good thing. I think the other thing I would add to that is just reading a book called Sacred Fire this last week that talks about how you can divide Jesus up into two sections. You know, if you read the Gospels, the first half of the Gospels is about his ministry, and he was very active. And so the verbs were all real active. He led, he taught, he healed, he preached. And then at the end of his life, it's the passion story when he goes to the cross, but then it's all passive. He was led, he was tried, he was beaten, he was crucified. So he's no longer doing anything. He is not active. And the irony or paradox or something is that perhaps his greatest gift, the gift of the cross, involved not something that he was doing, but something that was being done to him. And so that idea that the only ways that we contribute are by doing more, doing more, doing more with Jesus himself, that was not the case. So I think for you and me, as we're walking through life, it means there's going to be this constant rhythm of how do I get nurtured? How do I get fed? I do think the term self-care, it doesn't always resonate a ton with me, because it feels a little self-focused or selfish. It's an important word, probably a helpful one. Be good to talk to Dr. Rick about that at some point.
You have a better term, John, for it?
No, I don't. But one of the things that struck me when we were talking about it is part of what happens in self-care, if it's being done right, is I recognize that it's God who's caring for me. And I am receiving love and kind of connecting the dots with him. It's not something I do apart from God. It's something I do together with God. And it's an important way of actually receiving from God.
Yeah.
It's also something that I do so that I am able to do and to give and to offer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that something that you think is best done through like a plan and a place, and I sit down every day to get that from
God? You know, I think that depends a lot. If you're a J, yeah, but you know, on the Myers-Briggs, where you're detail organized, all that kind of stuff, yeah, knock yourself out. I'm an extreme P on the Myers-Briggs, so I tend to go much more by energy, but I do think to be intentional about it, and for sure to do it in community. So to have some people that I'm talking about this with. So, I mean, we will talk sometimes, just our little team on Become New, is we always want our first priority to be not what we're doing, but are we becoming the kind of people that God wants us to be? And if we need to choose between being more productive at the cost of that becoming, we'll choose the becoming. And so to have people that I'm talking about, that we're talking about that with, I think is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just to speak on that, John, that's something I love about Become New, and something I find really challenging about it, because we'll get, you know, excited about an idea. And I mean, Jackson, I know even you've experienced this on the team. It's like we get excited about something and then we say, how much energy is this going to take us? You know, how much stress is this going to bring into our life? And we're all from sort of high performing organizations in our previous worlds. Mm-hmm. So we have this gear in us that's like, let's go, you know, let's do it. And it's been very helpful for your leadership, John, I think, to just say, oh, we don't need to do that. You know, that seems like it's a heavy burden, or let's do it later. Let's make the time. And that's just so antithetical to like the culture message of, you know, think about how long it's going to take you to do something and then cut it in half and do it in half the time, right? It's like, oh, we all respect that. And we go, wow, I wish I could be like that. And so I'm very grateful. It's refreshing to hear that. Just kicking on this thread, someone chimed in, Donna, on this topic, and just said, I don't know how to empty myself. My selfish nature takes over and I have to pray more about this. It made me think about something, and I'd love to hear you speak to this, you know, just tension, but it made me think about Dallas Willard's teaching on the will and desire and like the balance of how do you bring your desire into submission to like the will, like what I want to do, I don't do, what I don't want to do, I end up doing. Any encouragement for Donna, or I mean, really all of us who struggle with this? Donna, you're not alone. I definitely struggle with this every day.
Oh gosh, yeah, and my basic nature is so tuned to how am I doing? How do people think I'm doing? I will sometimes talk about it like I just suffer from report card-itis. And you know, am I getting A's? Do my parents think I'm doing good? Do my teachers think I'm doing good? Are lots of people watching? How's this going? How that and feedback, which is important to get, can be a good source of you know, course correction, but it's horrible fuel to live on. And so often I may not know exactly what the right thing to do is. Talking with somebody, they feel like they're getting prickly. Should I confront them? Am I misunderstanding this? Is this a time? It's like very often we don't know what the right thing to do is. So at that point, to just ask, all right, God, you know, give me as much wisdom as I can take, and then make the best decision that I can, and be relaxed about the outcome if I'm sincerely trying to do the right thing. The other piece for me is look for people in your life who can teach you about how to serve. So for me, Nancy is such an activist. And one of the things that I'll find is with family or friends, if somebody asks, could you do this? Could you pick this up? Could you do a favor? Is there something you could do? She will just instinctively say yes. And I will not infrequently feel like, why did you say yes? I don't want to do that. Or let's, and, but the reality is, in almost every case, yeah, that's something where we could do that. I could do that. It would be good after it's done. I would be glad that it was done. It would be a good connection. So now there's other people. I know people who I know and love dearly, and they're apt to say yes too often in ways that get them overcommitted and exhausted. And so they have to work on other issues. But for all of us to know, here's the way my own wiring works. Here's how I'm likely to fall short. And how can I find somebody in my life that can teach me, help me, model for me, go in a different direction that's a healthier, a more God-honoring thing. It's the kind of deal where I don't think that we can do it alone. That's where I think we just need to be in community.
Yeah, that's good. Another question that came in, let's see if I can find it here. The question was, you know, a suggestion for Become New. It'd be great if you could provide for us something daily to put into practice each day. So I just wanted to answer that person and say, if you subscribe to our emails, which you can do at becomenew.com/subscribe, we actually put in there a here's how or so today little section. And so based on the teaching, it does give you one practical action step that you can put into practice. So just in case you're interested, or you know, some people don't know those things that we offer. So
just speaking of comments coming in too, you were asking, is there a better term than self-care? Yes. Somebody wrote this and I like it. Soul care. Mm-hmm. And I think soul is an interesting word, largely lost in our day, but a real important one and a good one to recapture. And there's just nuances in the word self and the word soul. So selfish sounds one way, soul-ish. You know, the word soul tends to communicate my being in the presence of God. It tends to bring God kind of into the picture. So they actually, initially they wrote soup care. And I wasn't quite sure what soup care meant, and then corrected it, soul care.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting when you think about self-talk. How do I talk to myself? That's an important thing to look at. Soul talk, you know, in the ancient world, like in the Psalms, the soul is the one dimension of the self because it's so deep that people would address directly as though it were another person. Why are you downcast, O my soul? Bless the Lord, O my soul. You don't see that in the Bible or in other ancient literature. You don't see people addressing their heart or addressing their mind or addressing their self, but they address their soul. I think that's because the soul is so deep and so mysterious and so vast. Dallas used to say, a single soul is larger than the universe. So I like that soul care language.
Yeah.
I think there's an entire book on that. Soul keeping, something like that.
You should write it.
John. That's right. You can have it today if you order it.
Yeah. Jackson, I thought that was beautifully, beautifully stated. And as a poet in the woods, you probably appreciated that.
Yes. No, truly. One of the ways that I think, I've just some thoughts tossing around in my head with everything we've been talking about, that the way that some of this tends to manifest in my life is like through self-importance. So you talked about report carditis a little bit. It's not quite that for me. It's like, for me, those thoughts they sound like, am I needed? I need to be needed. Mm-hmm. I am I am Am I an important part of this person's life or this organization that I'm working for? And I think the reminder that I have to meditate on is I am not the hinge on which the success of God's ministry swings, or I am not the hinge on which the success of Become New swings. And I think it's just so healthy for us to operate out of that place. And I find when I do, I'm a much better person. I present as a better husband, as a better friend, as a better father, when I realize that I do not have to carry this. No one's asked me to carry all the weight, nor am I designed to carry all the weight. And it's a difficult reminder, and one that comes slowly, but I think that's definitely how I tend to try to, you know, renew that part of my mind.
Really good, Jackson. Thanks.
Yeah.
That is good. There's another comment, John, if we can just keep interacting with these comments for a minute, if that's okay with you. This is from Bruce, and he says, "You taught us at Crossings that it's good to be busy, but ruthlessly eliminate all hurry. And that has been a life changer for me. Being busy means living life intentionally. In a hurry is living selfishly." Could you speak to that dynamic a little bit for?
Yeah, that little line, ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life, of course, comes from Dallas Willard. And he would distinguish between those two sometimes and say that to be busy is primarily a condition of the outer person or the body. It's to have many things to do, many tasks to achieve. And Jesus was often busy. We have different capacities for busyness. We have different wiring. Some people are wired where having lots of issues on their to-do list is actually energizing for them and can be quite good. And then other people can be easily oppressed by that. So there are individual differences that are good to pay attention to. But that's busy. Being hurried is a condition of the soul. It's an inner condition. And to be hurried means I'm so preoccupied internally. You know, Rick and I were talking about the other day, the difference between having our mind be occupied by a thought versus preoccupied by a thought. When it's preoccupied by a thought, then I start ruminating, I start spinning. It's marked by anxiety or a kind of desperation or a sense of my own inadequacy. And then I'm unable to be fully present in this moment, like right now, to just pause, take a deep breath. Okay, I can be present with Jackson and Tim and Pam and Lisa and Clovis and Rapid Packaging and Michael Ware. Oh, Michael just finished big in Washington, D.C. Man, Michael, God bless you. The work you're doing, our country needs that so much. Ryan and me, just be fully present and able to experience delight or respond in whatever way that response is needed. That's to be unhurried. And so to recognize different seasons in life may involve different levels of busyness, and I can invite Jesus into that. But we're never called to be hurried. We're never called to be so preoccupied that we can't be fully present together with God.
Beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. Cool. Well, I'd love to just share with people about kind of what's coming up next and what we're planning to do. And also just to remind folks that really at the heart of Become New, I mean, what we do, our purpose is to grow spiritually one day at a time ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then to help anyone else who wants to be on that journey with Jesus just one day at a time. And so we're so glad that you're here. And this is it's more than a video to watch, really. It is a community that you can be part of. And it's totally voluntary and it's always all free. So you can just tune in anytime, anywhere, and join us. The other thing at the heart of Become New, other than teaching, is prayer. And I think, you know, many of you may have experienced this before, but we meet to pray for people because people send us their precious prayer requests every day. We get so many. And so we do pause to pray for them out loud. There's a group of us that meet and we read through those, we pray over them, and then somebody writes back a prayer response, spends time writing it. These are not AI generated responses. These are real people writing them, sometimes making real mistakes in, like, you know, their spelling errors and stuff, but we are spending time praying for you. And so, I mean, when I think about Become New and just literally what we spend time doing, those are the two things we work on, is just teaching and prayer. And so if you've got a prayer request, you can put it in the comments here. You can text it to us. You can email it to us, and rest assured that we'll spend time praying for you. Yeah. So John, we are going to come back with fresh teaching. We're going to continue to distribute teachings because you're almost to 1,000 episodes, John.
Crazy. So
we need to do something for the 1,000th episode. Mm-hmm. I got to go back and count, like, when is that going to happen? I hate for that to whoosh past us. But we're going to distribute some teachings for the next 2 weeks from the past, what you've done before. And then we're going to launch into a new series November 10th and talking about gratitude. Do you want to share anything about that, John?
Yeah, I actually have sitting on my desk an exercise in gratitude that was designed by another friend of the show, Mark Nelson, who's a philosopher at Westmont College Christian. And he, you know, sometimes doing gratitude journals or exercises can start to feel like a to-do list or laborious or something. And he brought a level of freshness and kind of energy. And how do you find stuff that actually delights you? That's terrific. So we're going to spend a couple of weeks leading up to Thanksgiving and study gratitude together and work on how to be grateful and seek to do it in a way that is inviting and compelling and effective, and not just, you know, you should be grateful, which just doesn't work real great. When parents say to the kids, you know, say thank you to Annie, but what do you say? You know, we know we're supposed to be thankful, but that doesn't necessarily generate it. So we'll spend a couple weeks on that one. And then we're going to do an Advent series this year that I think will be really, really cool around Christmas music and songs. And a lot of the theology that we learn really comes through hymns. And so that will be great. And then after the first of the year, looking at a series or a couple of series on the topic of no condemnation. There is now, therefore, no condemnation. And that may actually turn into another resource also. But man, we're in the culture, social media, politics, in our families, our workplaces, churches, what Dallas Willard used to call condemnation engineering is just rife. So learning how to live without doing condemnation engineering, I think will be really cool. So that's all to come, God willing.
Yeah, that's going to be sweet. We're excited. We're excited about that, John. Thank you. And thanks for just continuing to be faithful and diligent and turning out these teachings every single day. If you want more from Become New, head over to becomenew.com and you can find a bunch of resources. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also listen on podcasts. If video isn't really your thing, you don't want to look at all those books behind John, you know, and feel book envy, then you can just listen and not watch on podcasts. Jackson, anything else you want to throw in at the end?
No, I mean, I'm excited. Our community grew a lot during this past series. So we've got a lot more new eyes and ears in our YouTube audience. So I'm excited for them to get to know John a little better and just walk with us on the journey of becoming new.
Sweet. Wonderful. All right. Well, with that, I think we're going to conclude the official time of sharing on the live. And if you don't mind, take a minute to hop over to bnfeedback.com and just give us your feedback on this series. We would love to hear from you. Anything else, John?
Yep. I'll close with Jerry's translation of Paul's prayer for the Church of Philippi and Become New Fellowship of the Withered Hand. This is very, very deeply my prayer for you. Prayer has become just a mysteriously deep part of our journey together. And I think it was such a big part of this season of life for me, because I know so many people, including many of you, were praying for me and for Nancy. So I thank my God. Every time I mention you in my prayers, always in every prayer I pray for all of you with joy, because you have been partners with me in the gospel from the first day until now. And I am sure that God, who began the good work through you, will bring it through to completion in the day of Christ Jesus. It is only right that I should feel this about all of you, because you hold me in such affection, and because all of you are sharers together with me in the privilege that is mine, both of being in prison and of defending and vindicating the gospel. For God is my witness. I yearn for all of you with deep affection that comes from Christ Jesus. And I pray that your love may keep on increasing still more and more in deeper knowledge and broader perception, in order that you may approve what is excellent, be pure and harmless in preparation for the day of Christ, and be filled with the fruit of righteousness that Jesus Christ produces. And all this for the glory and the praise of God. Amen.
Amen. Thanks, John. All right, friends.